Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio. Brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. Now, here's your host.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. But before we get started, it's important to recognize our sponsor, OnPay. Without them, we could not be sharing these stories. Today on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Annie Eaton, and she's with Amoebus at Labs. Did I say that right, Annie? I should have asked before.
You did. Very good.
So tell us about Amoebus Labs. How are you serving folks?
Yeah, so Amoebus Labs is actually very publicly new. It's something that I have been working on with my team since February, but it is a brand new game studio in Atlanta. We primarily produce virtual reality games, although we have the skills and expertise to develop other platforms like PC, console, or mobile games. And we're focusing on a first launch of a game we're going to announce actually in September, but it's really exciting. It's more of a world-building game, and it's hopefully going to be nice and relaxing and very fun to kind of decorate your environment, all while being immersed in virtual reality.
So now, how did you get into this line of work? Have you always been a gamer and then kind of worked your way into this as producing games?
Well, it was partly being influenced by my current work, which was already in the virtual and augmented reality space. I co-founded a company called Futuris, which is another Atlanta-based company specializing in augmented and virtual reality for businesses. So that company is actually still around. We are about 6 years old now. And in seeing this market grow, we really wanted to take it to more of a consumer audience. So previously, we were mostly focused on enterprise software, using the technology for training and marketing and product visualization. And that's been fantastic, but an opportunity presented itself earlier this year to allow us to produce our first video game. And instead of keeping it under the Futuris name, we decided to actually spin out a game studio that will only focus on gaming. I have dabbled more casually in gaming. Growing up, we didn't have a ton of video games in our house. We were more of an artsy family doing things like ballet and piano. But we got to play some games now and then. I think I was telling my coworkers, the first game that my sister and I were really obsessed with was actually Chex Quest, which came in a cereal box and we could play it on our computer. And it's now made a resurgence. So I saw a new advertisement for Chex Quest HD in the grocery store the other day. But many members of my team actually have backgrounds in video game development, their degrees and their careers prior to working for me. So it was a perfect fit to kind of take this technology that we know and love, augmented and virtual reality, and blend that with our creativity and the drive to create something to share with the world.
So now when you're making kind of that shift from, it's kind of a B2B to a B2C, was that kind of difficult for you?
Yes, that was challenging. And it's also a little bit scary because it's a world that I am less familiar with. Definitely leveraging a lot of knowledge and mentorship from other industry professionals, especially in gaming, because it can be such a fast-paced and also sometimes brutal industry. You either have a hit or sometimes it's a flop, but it's kind of hard to be in that in-between space. So shifting from being very focused on one customer on a large scale over a long period of time to now this kind of one-to-many approach with a consumer game release has been challenging, but we have a community manager. Her name is Jane, and she is really focused on learning about our audience and interacting with them even before we have our first launch to make sure that it's as successful as it can be. And we're keeping our customers and our consumers in mind throughout the entire development process.
Now, how do you kind of start? Like, do you have a concept of, okay, it's going to be this kind of a game? And then do you start kind of getting people involved to, so they can have opinions, or do you have a vision that you got to get it kind of built out somewhat so they can kind of really be in it in order to know if they like it or not?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of both. It's interesting, especially with the fact that we have all been working remotely for the past few months. I was actually stopping in the office to grab something, and I went in our conference room, and the notes on the whiteboard from, I think it was March 5th, which is the last day I was in the office, as a full-time team was in the office. All the notes from our meeting that day were coming up with game concepts. So I was looking at it because, you know, it's been a few months and I kind of forgot where it all started. But it was pretty much the whole team coming together, throwing out ideas, thinking about what could work. And one of the things we're trying to do is make really fun, engaging games, immersive games that are not violent, because there are a lot of shooting games and more violent games out on the market, and we wanted to fill a different niche. And just thinking about all of the different concepts we could create. After that point, we actually took, I guess, the top 10, and each team member did a little mini pitch. It was very quick. Each person got to really pick their favorite and pitch it as if, you know, you think of like a startup pitch competition, but on a much smaller scale since it was just a concept. And they pitched them to me. And then we ended up kind of voting as a team. I know a lot of companies really rely on the producer or the investors to make that decision, but we've always been very collaborative. So we really decided as a team which two were the top concepts. And then we drilled down even further on that by splitting into groups and really refining those concepts, and then again presenting them to the group. And then we ended on one concept, and that was probably in, I guess, April. And then from there, it's been a constant evolution. But after that point, we've been able to start to put together these groups of the ideal personas who would be playing our game. There's three, and they actually do have names. We treat them as real people, even though we've made them up. Some of them are influenced on elements of our own personalities and our friends and just the people that we want to make this game for. And then we're always thinking about them as we make these decisions. We haven't quite gotten to the place where we can do something called playtesting, which is where we actually bring in people from the outside to test these early versions of the game or these early pieces of the prototyping that we're doing. But we have been sending out more, I guess, written surveys or graphic surveys to kind of see which way people are leaning for certain elements of it. So we've been keeping some people involved and kind of building up a pipeline of testers so that when it is that time, we have a pool of people to work with.
So now having, you know, conceptualized it, I guess, in person, but now when you're actually doing the work of it and that's all happened virtually, has that brought about some challenges or maybe even some opportunities that have come out of that that maybe we wouldn't have if you were all together all the time?
Yeah, I'd say definitely challenges and opportunities. First, on the challenges side, was that we were not all equipped with the hardware we needed to be 100% remote. So from a computer and like software standpoint, we totally were. But when you think about the fact that now every single person in my office has to have their own virtual reality set up at home, that was a little bit of a challenge up front. We had been very safely and sanitarily sharing headsets here in the office. There are some really great aftermarket products specific to sanitizing headsets. So we've been using those for years so that we could share in the office, but now it's, you know, making a several thousand dollar purchase of new headsets to send one out to every employee's home. That was one of the, I guess, harder challenges, not just the financial aspect of it, but the fact that because everyone is now isolated and has to stay at home, virtual reality headset sales were actually on the rise. So where, you know, we may not have had a problem sourcing this many headsets in a week last year, Currently, to get the headset we're developing for, which is called the Oculus Quest, we have to order them one at a time, and we would have to wait between 2 to 4 weeks for one of them to arrive. Luckily, we were able to make several orders at the same time, but there was still that waiting period of just the supply catching up to the demand. So that's something we weren't totally anticipating. But when we're talking about benefits, we have been able to utilize developers and contractors outside of Atlanta. So we like to try and keep as much work locally as possible, but sometimes you have to bring in a specialist, and that's not something that we would necessarily find around the corner, which can be a challenge when you're used to working physically and face-to-face with your team. But now we have someone, a contractor in California. We also have a contractor in the Netherlands. So we're able to tap very specific talent for these pieces of the project that would be best suited for these individuals. And that's something we can do because we have a complete remote infrastructure and workflow.
Now, have you been able to kind of crack the code on what to me would be a challenge in remote working as opposed to in kind of a collaborative in-person setting, where like I could be working with you and I could just walk by and see you're doing something and I can engage a conversation like, oh, that's cool. Did you think of this? Or like those kind of serendipitous kind of collisions that occur when you're in close proximity. Are you able to kind of capture any of that or have a method to capture some of that?
Yeah, it's that is something that has taken a while to get over. And I still don't think we're, you know, ever going to be 100% at that level, just because there's something, it's that water cooler talk you hear people speak of. It's just something that comes up naturally. And we're not necessarily having to force it, but having to schedule these times to have that collaboration. So it is a little bit different. And really, the first several weeks of us all working from home was not just riddled with confusion and like anticipation and the unknown, but also like missing out on that type of interaction. However, we have been able to, I guess, mitigate that in some ways. We always try, at least most of my employees prefer to have their video on and calls. So you really can see when someone has an idea that's being sparked by something someone else is saying. So it's not just being lost on who talks the loudest. You can kind of see people's reactions, and that's been really, really helpful. We also did something where we would have these team lunches, and we still have them, just not quite as often. But we were, so many of our conversations would spur some really creative and amazing ideas, and they would always happen at our lunch table. All of us would eat together and just talk about random things that would oftentimes kind of flow into coming up with really cool ideas for the office or for the business. And so because we lost that, we did start having what we would call drop-in team lunch, where every day between 12:30 and 1:30, there would be an open video call. Anyone could come. No one was required. It was not supposed to be about work. It could always turn into that if you wanted it to, but it was not a meeting for work. It was just to socialize, keep up with each other, and keep that really close-knit connection that we have as a small team. And I think that really helped, and especially for some of the people on my team who either live in an apartment or live alone and really weren't seeing other people as much, it meant a lot to us. And so I think we got some of that back by implementing that. It's not every day, but it is regular enough to where it's helping. And then we're very, very active on our chat platform. We do use Microsoft Teams. I know everyone has their preference, but that's been really helpful. And we have different group chats, and you know, we're typing back and forth to each other. And so if something comes to your brain or you need help, you can get instant access to everyone else's collective brain. So that's been really helpful too.
So now let's educate the listener a little bit about the type of gaming you're doing, virtual reality and augmented reality type of gaming, rather than kind of the old school way of gaming.
Yes. So one of the biggest, I guess, challenges or differences is that when you're in a virtual reality game, you're completely immersed. So you are wearing a headset that is showing you a complete world in your vision. Whereas on a console or a PC game, or even on your phone or tablet, you're looking at a screen, but it's just a rectangle in front of you. It's not completely surrounding you. So that's the biggest difference, I suppose, is visual. You also can interact with things with your hands. So when you think of gaming, you might think of a controller, like an Xbox controller, but this is actually using hand controllers to where you can kind of move your index finger to pick up an item as if you're pulling a trigger, or you can actually surround your hands or bring your hands around the controller and squeeze to be like grabbing something. So with that, it gives you more of a realistic feeling of interacting with the objects in the game. So you are now a part of the environment. You are interacting with every single part of it. That can present some difficulties as a developer, because instead of thinking of a rectangle in front of the user's face where, or the player's face, where all you're seeing is one view at a time, we now have to think of every single thing around you. There's nowhere to hide anything. You really do have to think about everything in the world and make sure that whatever you place in this gaming world is intentional and interactable. Because if it's not, and it's just sitting there to be pretty, someone goes up and tries to pick it up and it doesn't work, they're going to think the game is broken. This also opens up, I'm not sure if I'd call it necessarily a new genre, but more of an adaptation of the genre of games that focuses more on storytelling. So there are a lot of amazing narrative video games on the market, and that is a growing, category of game. And this new not even new platform, but just virtual reality as a gaming platform is allowing for this narrative game to really surround the player. So there are a lot of benefits. Again, I think I mentioned earlier, headsets are on the rise as far as sales, but it's still not, you know, everyone doesn't have one. It's growing quickly, but it's not, you know, as many people as have a PlayStation or an Xbox. However, it is getting to a point where it's more affordable. The Oculus Quest is the same price now as some of these other consoles, and the content libraries are growing. So I think it's especially exciting for people who really want to be immersed in the story or immersed in the environment, and who want to be able to interact with the game. Think of it, if you just dropped a version of yourself into the TV, that's basically what we're doing. So it's a very exciting field to be a part of, and virtual reality especially is a great platform.
Now, what's the breakdown of how many people are using currently like virtual reality gaming as compared to the whole big pie of gaming?
Yes. It's hard to even comprehend how big the big pie of gaming is. And I recently saw some statistics. I think it was saying that the gaming industry, just very general high-level gaming industry in the world is, I want to say it was $170 billion. It's huge. Now, that does encompass all of the different platforms. It also encompasses esports, which are growing in popularity. The, sport of watching others play games and not only cheering on your favorite team, but also learning from them and learning new moves from them. And then also streaming, which is huge. So that encompasses all of that. I'll have to double check my numbers later, but virtual reality consumer content, the numbers are still trying to be defined. So I've seen anywhere from that consumer content makes up about $500 million in sales a year to less than that. I haven't seen much more, but I do know that from what I saw in a recent study, it was supposed to increase by about five times by the year 2023. So it is an exponential growth, but unfortunately, the data isn't really out there, at least not publicly acknowledged for us to know. I did see also that I think it was a news article a couple of months ago said that Oculus sales, as far as content, so people buying games, was over $100 million in the past year. So that's really good news. There's not a ton of titles out there compared to the overarching gaming industry. So very exciting to see numbers like that as such a small community. But I have full confidence that it will continue to grow because it has been growing over the past 5 or 6 years when I first got into the field.
And then with the advent of, less expensive gear, and it's not going to be just the early adopters anymore. It'll be more of a mainstream audience.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's, again, something that the hardware price will help with. So the Oculus Quest I mentioned, I think, is listed at $399, not $3.99. Wouldn't that be nice? But yes, yeah, so I know it's a little more expensive than the consoles, but some of the like upgraded higher specialty consoles can run you about that much. And it's getting easier and easier. And they're about to release a second version of that headset, hopefully by next year. And so I have a feeling either the price will continue to drive down, the hardware will get better, or hopefully both.
Now, being a woman in the gaming industry, I would imagine we work with a lot of women in technology as a whole. I would imagine that's a smaller subset, that it's primarily a male-dominated industry. Is that accurate?
Yes, that would be accurate. And that's one of the reasons I'm very excited to be getting into this space, because even though there's the perception that there aren't a lot of women in the field, there are a ton of women consumers. So as far as gaming, I've seen numbers as high as 50-50 split between male and female players. However, it's, 10 to 20%, depending on the study you see, as far as actual gaming, game developers or producers, sometimes even less than that. We've always been a fairly gender diverse team, at least at 50-50. Currently, we're running 60-40 split for women. So we're currently in the majority at my company, but a lot of my colleagues, it's hard because I don't know that the representation of women in this field has really lent itself to getting other women to be interested in the field, which I think is why there are so many women players, but not as many who work in the field. There have been a lot of challenges, a lot of really toxic workplaces, and a lot of really bad stories coming out of this space. So it's like, for some people, unless you're insanely passionate about it, why would you consider going into this field? But I'm hoping that companies like mine and others, with some of these new colleagues I'm meeting throughout this journey, will be able to give the industry, I guess, a better name as far as a workplace and draw more women to the field.
Well, it's one of those things, like you're focusing on nonviolent or less violent games. When the preponderance of violence and everything is in there, you're attracting a certain crowd that likes that. And I would imagine a lot of those people are more male, testosterone-driven people.
Possibly. I'll have to find a study, but you're probably right. But yes, that is one of the things that we're focusing on while we're just making this one game to start. We are trying to focus on games that would reach a female audience, not exclusively a female audience, but that would resonate and be a positive gaming experience to get more people who would not necessarily identify as gamers to get into the field.
Now, when you had the idea of doing this, what were some breadcrumbs that led you to believe that you were on the right track?
Yeah, I think it's kind of been a little voice, not inside of my head, but kind of all around me with my team. And I've always tried to listen to them and value their opinions. And so many of them have backgrounds either as video game developers or are just very passionate about gaming. And when you constantly see this industry growing and growing as a business owner, you can't ignore it. Or if you do, you're not really thinking straight. So part of it was just, you know, being in the right place at the right time with the right opportunity. But part of it was realizing that we already had the infrastructure to develop this type of content. We've, in the back end, been using these same exact skills to produce virtual reality content for our enterprise clients, and that we could have a completely different division, different stream of revenue, and something that would help us have more, independent sustainability without these client projects. We really love working on the enterprise projects, but they typically are very large, but then they last a finite period of time. So similar to what a marketing agency or something like that would get. So with this, we were looking at ways to diversify our revenue and ways to have more independent streams of revenue, and looking at our current skill set and being able to apply that fairly seamlessly to a new market seems like a no-brainer.
So now, what's been the most rewarding part of the adventure thus far, having to deal with this kind of chaos at the beginning of the journey?
Right. Well, I think one of the best things has been something that we all really can collaborate on and be creative with while working remotely. So it really has been a way to bond the team while we aren't together physically. And then we're just scratching the surface. So I am so excited about the future of this, but I really feel that producing something that every single member of my team can have a voice in, and that we're truly creating together with our own creative thought, has been the best thing ever. It's better than I could ask for. So I'm really, really happy that it's turning out this way. It's been, you know, extremely challenging, especially balancing both sides of me running Futurist and then now being the executive producer at Amoebus Labs. It's something that had time travel machine and looked forward to what it was going to be, I might have thought twice, but I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I jumped into it. And I'm so excited to be on this very exciting new journey.
So now, what do you need more of? How can we help you? Do you need more clients, more funding?
We are in the middle of leading up to our first play testing. As I mentioned earlier, just getting to the point where we can put some prototype work or early game play in the hands of our consumers. So anyone who's interested in staying up to date with us can sign up to be on that list on our website, amoebuslabs.com. That's really the biggest one. We're just trying to get a large potential consumer and fan base so that we can grow it and be ready for when the game launches early next year.
And Amoebus is Amoebus Labs with an S .com.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, Annie, thank you so much. And congratulations on all the success. You should be very proud. This is a big achievement.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk to you today.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We'll see y'all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. And remember, this work would not be possible without the support of our sponsor, OnPay. Please support them so we can continue to share these important stories.
Today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio is brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com.